Okay, I didn't know I have to make a general introduction in Muso, but I'll try my best to introduce you to one. I don't want to make some abstract, non-relevant, intelligent, historical remark, okay? You want to make something which is very practical, something which shows us how Judaism or Rabbi Soil looks at the person in a slightly different way than we are used to. You can always enter and you always, okay, let's make it first. You can enter and you also can walk out. Whatever you want. No problem. So that is the game. Okay, you can enter, please sit down, no problem. And so we try to see how what we are taught in a general way without quotations, without making you tired with all kind of quotations. But what I will try to tell you, that is based on what Rabbi Soil says. I think it, hopefully in a genuine way, hopefully that's true, what I try to make my best. Let's first think together. I want to ask you a riddle, a question. Let's think together. I want to know who you are. When do I see who you are? When you have a spontaneous reaction, unconscious behavior, or when you are doing something out of a conscious decision? Where is the person more revealed? Huh? That's a question. We can ask this question. I know we, in the 21st century, after 100 years, after Freud, are very much biased with this question. But we have to ask ourselves once a very simple question. Where is the person in his conscious decision or in his unconscious reaction? So today's society is very much leaning towards that the person is recognized in his unconscious reaction. And this, according to the Torah, is 100% wrong. That's wrong. Because we are understanding a human being as someone which makes a decision. In Hebrew, you call that bchira, or bechira, or however you want it, free will, or whatever you want. So we are 100% confident with that the person reveals himself at that moment where he has a free will. And the free will reveals itself in the moment of a decision. I can decide. I am in a place in my life where I can make a decision. And then when you see what I decide, you see who I are, who I am. Okay? That is the first thing which we have to understand very thoroughly. It's not what we are used to think. We are very much used to think that I am when you want to know who I am. So the best way to know who I am is that you are seeing me reacting in an unconscious way. Okay? So let's take this the way the Torah speaks, that we are what we are deciding. Bchira. That's what a human being is. Okay? Now, that is difficult, because this decision making can go awkward, because the decision making can be not free. It can be dictated by all different kind of inner unconscious or conscious or unconscious forces which they try to pull at the person and make him not free in his decision. This is the place where Rabbi Soil speaks. He always speaks about, I want to build a human being. But the Rabbi Soil, that means I have to deal that your inner desires and your unconscious, when you want, leanings are not taking over, that you should be have the ability to come to a clean or as much as possible clean decision. That means, with other words, that you are able to be a full-fledged human being. Otherwise, you are a guided person. You call, I think you call that zombie. That's right. Something like this. That's what I read, you know, with Ramachandran when he writes his books. I saw, that's a nice word. I don't know what that means. I never met one, you know. But I think that's what you call. That's what you call that. And we all know. So I don't know. Over here, people work in neuropsychology or something like this. People work with that. So you know, Menzinger or say these people, you know, which they are very intelligent, and they tell you there's absolutely no free will. The whole consciousness is one big optical illusion, when you want to say like this. It's a question of a circuit in the brain which goes too quick for you to understand how that works, and that creates the illusion of consciousness and free will and all this. Including dirt or a worse word. I don't know, I can't use that word over here. This is all, according to my opinion, absolute flat-out nonsense. Because we are very simple people. I work with the simple reality. There's absolute no point that I have to explain away what everyone is absolutely aware of. There's no point to explain that away, you know. No, we are very simple people, and we work with a simple reality, because in the end, what will make the difference is your simple action and the simple reality. That will make a difference. And it's all nice speaking about no neural circuit, and just that doesn't do anything in the end, you know? In the end, you will be the same small, undeveloped person as beforehand. Yeah? And we don't want that. We want you to develop. We want you to be a human being. We want you to be a bigger human being. That's what we want. We are very practical people. Huh? We're not sophisticated people. Very practical. And in practicality, we know that we have to work on ourselves, that our free decision-making should be more free and more clean. That is what Rabbi Saul wants. But with other words, the way we began this whole discussion is that he wants to build a bigger human being, because the human being within you is your free will, and he wants to build a bigger human being. Okay, so that's the first thing. That this can go awkward, that this is that this goes awkward, that this comes to the surface in these portions we read now. Not that I don't like to speak about the portion we read, the weekly portion, that's not my point, but it simply comes out over here. Those were when I don't know how to speak, Moses, I speak in English as much as I can, even though Moshe is absolutely an English word, you know? The way I'm called Leuchter, that's a German word. And you don't call me Leuchter. That's the way you would read it in English. Yeah. Okay, so let's say Moshe. That's a good word in English. So Moshe, he sent those people which they had to look in the land of Israel, whether you can conquer that land or not. I don't know, you call that, spy is not a good word. Scout. It's a word, you know. So Meraglim is a word also. So let's call that Meraglim or scouts or whatever you want. Those people just go and look. So now they spoke gossip about the land, and they were punished for that. They spoke bad about the state or the land of Israel. They spoke bad about that, so they were punished. And they were punished, and in the beginning it says they were punished because also they didn't learn from the former incident which happened with the sister of Moshe, Miriam, which she spoke something about her brother, Moshe, and she was punished at that moment. And those people, they saw that, definitely, they saw that Miriam spoke about Moshe, and they saw that's not a good thing to speak about about another person gossip. So they saw that, and they didn't take their lesson. They didn't. Huh? But which lesson would they have to take? You shouldn't speak gossip. So, but she spoke gossip about the biggest person in the world. And when you want, the way you are learned, when you want, there is a Talmudic passage in Erchin, this I really don't know how to translate that, which said, when you want to know how bad it is to speak about a human being, you can learn it from those scouts, from those meraglim. Because when you speak about dead material, stones and trees, you speak bad, and you get so terribly punished when you will speak about a human being that was much worse. But then, what should they learn? They saw Miriam, the sister of Moshe, speak about a human being, and about a big human being, about the biggest human being ever. So how should they learn that now I can't speak about the stones? No! When you see someone speak about the stones, and he gets punished, then you can learn, aha! You speak about stones like this, you get punished like this, then you for sure can't speak about a human being. But when you see Miriam speaks about Moshe, and she gets punished, how in the world should I decide that because of that, I can't speak about stones? It has not said this. I can't learn like this. In this direction, it's closed. How should I decide that? Why should I decide I can't speak about stones? I saw she speaks about a human being. What do you do now? It's a Gemara in Erchin. That's a Talmudic passage in Erchin, which obviously stands in contradiction to what Rashi says. Because Rashi says, they should have learned from Miriam. No, I don't learn from Miriam anything. Because over here it speaks about stones. Yeah? The question is clear? Clear? So what is the answer? The answer is, no. You should have learned. Why? Because you have to go deeper and see that it's not only a transgression, what she spoke about Moshe. This transgression has a bad smell. Sie stinkt bis in Himmel. It's not only what you did. It's what... It has a bad smell. And then you go around in your life and then you see... And you think about the stones and then you... It's the same smell. Over there, it was a whole pot of dirt. Over here, it's a smaller amount, but... Schmeckt dieselbe. Derselbe stunk, you know? Same thing. That's what they would have to learn. They have, not only you can't rely, you can't rely only on the intellectual... argument that you say. Intellectually, that has nothing to do one with the other. Because over here you speak about a human being, and about the biggest human being, and over there we speak about stones. So speaking about stones and speaking about a human being, those are intellectually two different things which are connected in verse. That when you would see the stones, then you can decide the human being. But intellectually you can't decide from the human being on the stones. That doesn't go. Yes, intellectually you can't do that. Aber sie stinkt dieselbe. Has the same smell. Smells the same. So that is what Rabbi Soel so strongly wants from us. He calls that, you have to learn Musa. According to this part of learning Musa means that you have to get used not only to see facts. You have to get used that these facts tell you something which is like you see the emotional content of the thing. You see the smell of the thing. You see the musel, you call that. That's musel. You see the musel of the thing. And that's what Rashi says. These bad people saw that Miriam spoke about Moshe and they didn't learn musel. That's what it says. They didn't take musel. So Rabbi Yisrael was the one which created musel. That's right. They call the Musa movement. So there in Rashi it says, what means Musa? That you see the incident with Miriam And you don't only see what happened. You see how that smells. And you are learning from the incident that there are things which are bad, not only because of the heuristic or of the intellectual content of the thing, only also because they have a wrong message. The message, the emotional message, the smell is the wrong one. And that's the way your life will teach you. Huh? Will teach you how you have to be careful about your decision making. Because a person is living his life and he thinks, I'm clean, no problem. My thought process is clean. But he thinks, what are the facts? But he doesn't go and think, what do I smell over here? Then when you think, what are these messages, these delicate messages which I see happening in front of me in this case where I have to make a decision, then you begin to see, aha, that's not so easy. Aha, it could be that something is over here wrong. That's what they would have to see. Those scouts, they went and they were 100%, they didn't think we want to be mean people. They wanted to be good people. They didn't want to be mean. Anoshim, you call them. They were very righteous people. And they thought, we do the right thing. But their decision to do what they did was based on something which was, no, we don't do that. But they didn't do this. They only thought, I make the decision clean, you know. There's a question, should we enter land of Israel or not? And our position is that we have to help to make the decision in the best way. Let's go and see. And we see those humongous people, these big people, and dangerous places. And then we come back and say, big people, dangerous places. That's what we come back. And we did the right thing. That's what you asked from me. Yeah, but stinked though. Yeah. There was a bad smell in this whole thing. And you would have to know that this would have to tell you your decision is wrong. You have, there is something in there which makes you think wrong. That's what Rabbi Saul wanted to reveal. That's what Rabbi Saul wanted, that we should be educated. That our humanity should be bigger. We should be bigger human beings. Yes? So this is a very profound concept of Rabbi Saul, that you understand yourself, that your life is teaching you a thing, but your life teaches you how to understand and how to approach your own decision making. That is, you have to be careful not to fall into wrong things, and you have to be able to extract from your life also good things. Huh? I wanted to explain that to you, that you are able, from the other side, not only the smell of a bad, Musa also wants that you have good smells, which educate you, not only the bad ones. I tell you how that works. You know, let's say over here in Portland, it's very impressive, the trees, you know, very impressive. And you know that a human being is a little bit, looks like a tree, the way also the Torah says the human being looks like a tree, and the tree is rooted. The tree is rooted. So now I'm standing here as a rabbi, when you want like this, and then I tell you the human being is rooted. Then you think, ah, he's rooted in his ancestors, or he's rooted in his in the heaven, or whatever, you are rooted. But there's a big question about the roots of a tree, which you know that when you are living over here in Portland, the roots of a tree are amorphous. They are all over, you know? The tree doesn't have a straight root down. No, no. The tree has roots like this. Phonalizite. Yeah? Phonalizite from all the places. You can't, when you see the root of a tree, you can't decide which tree that is. There was once a German writer, perhaps you heard about him, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. You heard that was a man, you know. He was not only a writer, he was also a naturalist. I don't know how to call that. He was an opponent of Newton. at his time, and he was a very important writer in these things too. He wrote about plants, and he says, "I want to speak about plants only from the earth upwards, because then there we see the structure, there we see the leaves, there we see the classification. But underneath the ground, the roots of a plant is not interesting because it's amorphous. It has no clear form." That's what he writes. That's Goethe. So the question: why? Why are the roots of the tree so all over? And then why am I, my roots, when I, it's my ancestors, those roots, when they are so all over, ich darf sein, euch da Mamser a Stuki mit Abduki zusammen, you know? That is very uncomfortable when my ancestors are so upside down. No, I hope mine are a clean lineage, you call that. So the roots should be straight. Or you say, I'm rooted in the heaven, so I hope my roots in the heaven are not all over, you know? I have a straight connection. But when you look at the roots from the tree, then the roots of the tree, they're all over. Why? What is that parallel in a human being? So you know where your roots are. That is the same thing we spoke beforehand, only from the good side. Your roots are in your own life. I don't know whether you parts of you are in my age, so I don't know whether you have at home, you have these album, you know, you call it album in English, of photographs, you have album of photographs, so very nice. So I think an album of photograph, that is something which is, it's nice to look at it, but it's a little bit boring, because you know what's waiting for you. When you open up the album, and it is the trip to Hawaii, or wherever you went, Alaska, Anchorage. You went to look at the grizzly, you know. You went to Anchorage, and you have this nice entering the Alaska Airlines, and then you land there, and you come out, and you see the thing, this mountain which comes down halfway, you know, in the middle of the day, you know. So that was, you see that, you make a picture, and you hold the picture, nice album, you know exactly what will be. And you have other album from a marriage of your child, of your own marriage, and an album. I don't have album. I don't have an album. I do not. I have at home a box with pictures. And then that box with pictures, once or twice a year, I take the grandchildren come, and we take this box, and we simply flip it over, and then everyone, Gedenkste das. That's the way you look, and we look at the picture, much more interesting, you know? Much more interesting. So you have to know that you, in your heart, have such a box with pictures. You have that. And you, once in a while, when you are facing a decision, and you want to have the right smell, positive smell, that you're able to make such a decision, once in a while, you have to search in that box, and you take out a picture and say, I can do it. Why? Because 20 years ago, I did a similar thing. And that gives me nutrition for the decision now. I am able to grow as a human being, because in my life, I see that I once had the same thing going on, and I was able to do it. Huh? So that is the same thing as beforehand, only on the positive side. I learn from my life, not the intellectual context. No. I learn from my life this emotional, I don't know, emotional, does this content of my life means that I have forces within me which are positive, which I can use in order to grow. I have forces within me which are dangerous, which are smelling bad, which they will distort my good decision. I have to learn that. I have to dig in that. I have to see that there are things going on within me which they will influence my decision making from the good and from the bad side. You see that by the story which one knows normally, that the story from David and Goliath. You know the story, you know, that this Goliath, you came up there, you know, huge man, every day, morning and night, 40 days, he came up from the other side, and no one wanted to combat that man. And then David came, and the way it was, well, however it was, I don't have to tell the whole story, but he decided, I want to fight that monster. Yeah? So the question was, why did he enter this endeavor? So we have to admit, according to all what we know, and we have the Tehillim or whatever, you know, the Psalms or whatever we have, that David was a religious person. Okay? I think we are on the same page. David was a religious person. And when a religious person is asked, why do you think you want to enter such an endeavor, then the religious person will say, God will help me. That's right? So David said that definitely, but not the first. He didn't say it as a first argument. He said it as a second argument. The first argument of David wasn't that. He said, you know what? I was a shepherd. And there came a lion, and he wanted to take one of the sheep of my flock. I took my hands, and I opened the mouth of the lion and took the sheep out. And another time there came a bear and took a sheep in the claws. I opened these claws up with my own hands. I took the sheep out. So this monster will be like the lion and the bear. That's what David HaMelech said. That's what he said. So what did he do? He took out the picture. He had to make a decision. He had to make a big decision. He had to be a big man. He had to make a very difficult decision. I am going and undertake that monster. What did he do? He digged in his own box of pictures, and he looked, where is that picture that I can look at it and see, I will do that. I will grow. This is all not based on intellectual givens, on intellectual things. This is based on your own life experience, and you have to, from your own life, learn that you are able to decide, and you have to be, zahir. How do you call that?
Cautious.
You have to be cautious how you decide, because it could be there's something not good involved, because you know yourself. That was the point of Rabbi Saul. He wanted that a person, a man, should grow from all the sides, should be clean, more clean, and growing. And where do you grow from? You grow from your own life. That is, you are rooted in your own life. Now, those are like the roots of the tree, which the roots of the tree are all over, because that's what we have to do. I do not know, when I now speak in front of people in Portland, I do not know, where do I have the chutzpah to speak in front of them? Where do I have that? So I have to go and see. I did that once, you know. So I'll undertake that. I don't know the people, and perhaps I make all the mistakes in the world. But you know what? I once did this thing, and it was fairly good. So I'll try to do that again. So I take that out, and I look at it, and I decide, together with me, but I decide to grow. I decide to do something. I am a human being, which is bigger or whatever it is, yeah? And I have to be a human being. I think I have to be careful not to fall into a wrong way of doing the things, no? When I stand in front of you or in front of a congregation, then once in a while, the temptation is very bad, that I try only to flatter the people. Then I crack some jokes, and I always think I have to speak according to their mouth or their ears, you know. And then I will say only non-interesting and you know, margarina together with sugar or something like this, you know. No, they said, oh, no, this, I want to be careful from this, that stinks, you know, that has a bad smell. I don't want to do that. I have to be careful not to fall into that. From the other side, I have to try, how do I do it? I did it beforehand. So this is the way you learn and grow from your own life. But the whole point is that we want that you're making a decision is bigger. You grow as human beings. Because what does it mean to be a human being? To be a human being is where you decide. To be a human being is not where you react out of an unconscious reaction out of your stomach or whatever it is. No. There you are not human. There you are what you are. But the humanity is where you decide. But now it's very clear. This decision has a connection to your inner forces. So it's a delicate picture. It's not, I decide out of pure intellect. Show me how to do that. Yeah? I remember Shulamit Aloni at the time when she was Sarat HaChinuch. So she was asked once whether she thinks that that the Rosh Memshala, I don't remember who he was, he made a right decision. And he said, I am sure that our president is able to put his negias, how do you call that?
Prejudices.
He put that away and is able to make a clean decision. So I wanted to scream. It was the radio doesn't listen, you know. So to scream at her and say, show me how to do that. How take you? I take my. It's like it's similar that you take. I have my prejudices. That's like a well-defined thing, you know. That's a thing you know. My prejudices. And then you say, "Avik," and then you stay clean. How do you do that? I never stay clean because I always have to suspect myself. Etzelnicht. Perhaps no. And when you know, I don't want to speak against politics, but when you know once in a while how decisions are made on a worldwide or on a big political scale, der Stunk ist nicht bis in Himmel, der Stunk ist bis in Rokia Schwi, you know. It smells till endless, you know, from all different kinds of other things, and it sounds like so clean, you know, we have to decide that our nation is about Boba Mises, you know. It's all full with prejudices and things like this. Because it's never mind, you are not so aware that it's everything full with personality. It's full with yourself. So we have to see where are we in the picture together with that decision making. But in the end is the question that I have to make an active decision. I have to actively decide something, undertake something. That is the growth which we have. Okay? I here speak in front of people of a congregation, of a Jewish congregation, partly. I don't know whether everyone is a part of that, but of course we are part of the Jewish people over here in Portland. So this now is a very big question which we have to understand, we have to ask ourselves. You know? I have to ask myself, you have to ask yourself, do you want to be Jewish or you want to be a Jew? You know? So we are born Jewish or are Jewish. Okay, fine, I'm Jewish. But when you want to be a human being which is Jewish, you have to make a decision. Huh? You can't say, okay, you know what? I'm Jewish. And who makes the work for me? And there are certain rabbis we imported from everywhere, you know. And these people are entertaining us. And it's a Jewish entertainment. And let's see, you sit down, and I sit here. And then, you know, I'm very nice, inspiring. Yeah, this word, for example, of inspiration, it's not clear for me what that means. But inspiration means, for sure, something passive. That's right. You are inspired from something. I don't know what that means. What it means, I'm inspired. I'm inspired. That means something moves inside, something inspired. That is your human being. That is perhaps a beginning from a possibility that you should make a practical decision. Perhaps. Yeah? But we all think that's the end point. Yeah? We all think that you wanted to hear something about the Musa movement. Now you begin to hear something about the Musa movement, yeah? Because Musa movement means that you tell people, you know, I don't want to speak to you inspirational speech. Otherwise, it has nothing to do with Musa. Because then all of you are passive. You go home and say, very interesting, Leuchter, you know. First I thought he's Swiss, and he speaks English with an accent. And then there were good jokes there, and this picture of a tree with the roots, that was very inspiring. And then you go to sleep, shalom. You know, that's what you do. And then the whole Musa is out of the window, because you, as a human being, do not take any decision. Any. Because the point of a human being is that he makes a decision. And he does something with that decision. He does something. The active part of every one of us, that's what is wanted. It's not wanted this passive identification, inspiration, uplifted, you know, all these words, you know. I had a spiritual uplifting. And then you land back, and that's it, you know. There was no decision, there was no active thing going on. That is inedible. It's inedible because I want to speak to human beings. And you, human being, is where you make a decision. And now that's a very profound thing. You want to be Jewish, you have to make a decision. And an active decision in that realm. You have to do that. You have to do. Otherwise, there is a passive thing going on, which will be en passant. That will be go away. That will go away. Because all these inspirations and all these uplifting thoughts, they fade away when there is no human being behind it. And the human being is your decision, your free will. And that has to be made out of your own life. The inspiration is only able to trigger that you think about your own life and think, where can I take action? Where is my lion? And where is my bear? But I can take out and say, I did that once. You know what? I can go further on with that. I can take another step. I can be bigger. I, as a human being, can be much bigger than beforehand. Because I did it once. And I have that picture within me. And I have this message already existing within my heart. And I take that out. That's called self-education. That is what Rabbi Saul wanted. He wanted that the person should educate himself. So self-education is not a curriculum. That is the thing which I'm a little bit an unorganized man, but I am against this organized learning. For me personally, organized learning has more or less no sense, makes no sense. Because organized learning, that's not how life teaches you. Life teaches you in an unorganized way, like the roots are going in an unorganized way. You are taught in an unorganized way. You have to make a decision. Now, where from? Where do I take nutrition from? From here, from there. I have certain skills within me. For example, I tell you what happened to me. Anyway, that's interesting. I myself found out when I was young. I was studying mathematics. And I thought to be a mathematician. But inside, I wanted to be a conductor. You know what a conductor is? That's it. So what does a conductor do? What does he do? What is that? He leads the orchestra. What means leading an orchestra? What does he mean? What?
He interprets the music, explains it to the orchestra.
What is?
He explains the vision of how the music...
Yeah, that's right. That means I can listen like this. Where I grew up with that thing, you know. So I can listen to music in a way that I hear how these people play that differently. You know, it's a good example. I can't show it to you. It depends who conducts. When you take the Sixth Symphony of Beethoven, you know. And the question is, how long is that pause? They say, or that's a different music. You know, so I can listen like this. I hear that very well. So I want you to be a conductor. That means the conductor tells you, you know what, you come in a little bit later, and this has to be a little bit sharper, and that one has to be more quiet, and then the whole thing changes. That does a conductor. I want you to be that. So I thank God I'm not a conductor. But what do I do? I do the very same thing. Because what I try to do is, I try to work with people. And people come to me in a good way. I'm not a therapist, no. I don't help people out of their psychological problems. But I try to work with people that they should grow. So what do I have to do? I have to look at that life, what's going on in front of me, and then I have to tell them, you know what, this one you have to make louder. And that one has to come in later. It's the very same thing. It's the exact same skill. But this skill has the same smell. But it looks like entirely different. The smell of the skill is the same. Being a conductor and trying to work with a person in his life. I have to do the exact same thing. The conductor doesn't play the violin and play the cello and play the timpani and play everything. No. You do it. But you know what? I can try to make that what you do is better, is growing better. I can try to do that. That's exactly what I do. So I do the same thing as beforehand. It has the same smell. It's the same skill. But I took that out and said, you know what? I want to use that in another context. And I try to help people with that. I don't try to help make music. I don't try to make a new symphony. I try to help a person in his life with that. But the same skill. It is the same nutrition. You see? That's what you have to do. You have to grow. But you have to decide to do something. And when a person doesn't decide to do something, then he stays passive. And this passivity is the essence what Rabbi Shmuel Salanter wanted to fight. We are not passive people. We are people which are making decisions. And that's what we are. There we are. In our decision making, there we are. And we have to grow in our decision making. That was what he wanted to bring down to us. I think this is a very important actual message for our generation too. Because our generation, I see over here people are, most probably you have children, or that's why you are a little bit older, you have children, or it's yourself, but you know exactly the decision making from our new generation, or this thing which goes on now, the decision making is very poor. People don't want to take up responsibility, and people don't know how to make a decision in their life. They are pushed into things, you know. It feels better. It feels right. The Americans, they always speak about that. It feels right. Because it feels right. I decided. No. It feels right. You know, you go after, like you put the stomach in front of you and you run after your stomach, you know. What does it mean it feels right? Of course, in the end, it has to sit well with you. But that's not the only thing which is included. There is a conscious decision going on. And we are trying to put that conscious decision out at someone else. Do we blame someone else? Or we blame the environment? Or we are going with a peer group? But it's rare that you see a person which makes his own mature decision and takes responsibility on his own life. That's what Rabbi Shmuel wanted. Okay? So that is what I basically wanted to tell you. It is a thing which is a very practical thing over here in Portland. I know that Portland, Oregon, is a place where you can be laid back, you call that. We are good people. And we are taking the life in a very natural way. And we can skip once in a while a green light too, you know. Just imagine you would be in New York. I know that over here you can be by a green light, and just the one in front of you, he just does something else. And then he doesn't take the green light, and then you wait, and you don't honk, you know. So why should I honk? Wait the other green light. You know. In Israel, it is before, but the moment, not the moment it changes, the moment before it changes, you get the honk, you know? Because I know, go already, you know? That was going, no, over here, no, we are laid back, we are good people, and we take life in a very good, natural way. I admit, I agree with that. It's very good. But that doesn't make you free of making decisions. The other way around, this, I don't say comfortable, but this natural way of living you have over here, this non-pressed way, is only enabling you to make a decision in a more healthy way. But that it makes you free from the obligation to make a decision, that's a disaster. That is a disaster. Because then you're just like the tree next to you, you're standing still. You know, and don't move. You're not growing as a human being. You just are what you are, and that's it. No, I want you to grow. I want you to change. And that's only through making a decision. So even though we are here in a very calm place, and we are not nervous people, and we are not pressed, and we are not under any pressure, but you have to make a decision. And in our Jewish congregation, we have to understand, we have to make a decision in the regard of our being Jewish. Because then we are Jewish people. And not only the heritage is Jewish. We are Jewish people. As a human being, as a mensch, as a human being, I'm Jewish. That's only when I decide something in that realm. Okay? I think that's what Rabbi Saul wanted to teach us. Okay? So that is more or less the lecture I wanted to give. I don't want to make it harder than this one. But whenever you have a question, you can ask. But okay, when you want to ask, you can. When you don't want, you don't have to. But whenever you ask a question, I can perhaps say, I have to think. And I also may tell you that I don't know the answer. So that is the thing when you ask questions. But you can ask questions or not. That doesn't matter, whenever you want. Okay?
I have a question.
Yes.
It sounded to me like you were arguing both for subjective and objective thinking. That you were contradicting yourself back and forth.
Yes.
It might be it's a combination of both things. For example, when you were talking about the scouts or the spies, they may have been giving their objective observation of what they saw.
Very good.
However, they were either slaves themselves or children of slaves and didn't know how to smell.
Very nice. Very nice.
Maybe they didn't know.
Good.
The other thing is, when we take the subjective into account that you were arguing for, on the one hand, we look at things in history like the trial of Galileo, who said something objectively, but he was tried and put on trial and made to be quiet because the religious leaders said, you're not taking into consideration the smell of the religion.
Okay.
When you say. You see,
good. So very good. I like that. That's great. I'll try to answer that.
Okay.
Because this is a point which I thought a lot about. Okay. That's why I answer now. But I answer a thing which is not. I will answer all your questions because you asked a lot of questions. But I will answer only the topic. This unbelievable perception you had that there is over here like a blur. Between objective and subjective thinking. That was a very perceptive thing. I'm very impressed. And I want to explain that to you. When we think about this, it's all because of that what I tell you. When we think in the Torah, we think in a way which is exact, but human. That is the biggest revelation in the Torah, that you can think exactly, but human. But you learned in university? You learned, for sure. What did you learn?
Accounting.
Accounting. Okay, so that's shifting numbers.
Yes.
So I think you should...
Accounting and law.
And law, okay. Okay, so law is a little bit different, but when I was in Switzerland at the university, there was humanities, and there were exact sciences. I think that's a split normally. I don't know where law comes in, but there are humanities, and there are exact sciences. That's right? You hear? You hear what you listen? No. Listen. That means what is more human is less exact. And what is more exact is less human. Otherwise you can't call it like this. When you say humanities means that it's not so exact. Now, Shakespeare or Picasso or Monet or all these history things, they are not really exact. They are more subjective, or there are other things involved. But there is an exact way of thinking, but then humanities, it's not so human. It's more an objective way. The Torah is the only science in that sense which I know, which is exact, the way you see the Talmud, but it's also human. That's a novelty. You have an exact way of thinking, and the humanity stays in. And that's why in the Torah, that blur is essential. For example, we are saying a blessing over the renewing of the moon. Ugh. Nothing is renewed. It only seems to you like it is renewed. That's right? So you see, in the Talmudic literature, they say, it only seems to you, I know that is nothing renewed. They didn't think that is something half and third. They know that you see it from the other side. You know? They knew that exactly. But the way that the world presents itself to you, that is the reality we deal in the Torah. The Torah doesn't deal with a reality which is detached from a human being. Water by us is not H2O. That's by the chemistry. But water by us is a thing you need for a mikveh. You need the water for putting on the mizbeach. You need the water for all different kind of things. The water. Fire by us is not the gas which comes out of oxygen reaction. For the reaction with the thing. That's not this. Fire is a thing which could harm you and you have to guard it. Fire is a thing which can burn the offerings. That's what fire is. You always look at the reality, how that relates to you. Because the point of the Torah is reality relating to you, but in a well-defined way. And that's why in the Torah, it is an essential thing what you were seeing. That there is a blur between what you call objective and subjective. Because that's what Torah is. That is, there is a very clear thinking, but in the end, it is something subjective too. There's not this objective detached from human. It's not there. I think the objective thinking is dangerous. I don't want to make a tirade against objective, against science, because I myself very much like that and I read it. But scientific thinking or technical thinking is really something which can put humanity under a question mark. Yeah? You want to have everyone will be breugers on me. Now you will really hate me, okay? Now you will do that. I tell you only the thing. Excuse me, when I saw that, what was there, believe me, until today, I cried. I cried. Kipshut, I was sitting there reading that, I cried when I saw that. But that was what happened. You know what was in Los Alamos and Albuquerque, you know? They were the Manhattan Project, and they made the calculation about the atom bomb. They made this test in New Mexico, and then they went over to Hiroshima and dropped the bomb. And now, the physicists which were working in Los Alamos, they were good people. Good. Bethe was a very good person, you know? Born was a very good person. Oppenheimer was a bit awkward, but he was basically a good person, yeah? They were good people. They were not bad people there. And now the bomb dropped over Hiroshima. Now they are not the pilot which you have in the film, who dropped the bomb and doesn't know what happens behind him. He doesn't know. No, they knew. They made the calculations and they knew what's going to happen. They knew it exactly. When they got the message in Albuquerque or in Los Alamos that the bomb exploded over Hiroshima, what did they do? You know what? They threw a party. They were drinking. They were singing. They threw a party. When I saw that, I came out fainted. What's happening? Objective thinking. The human is consumed by his technical assess. You see? It worked! But people are dying, you know that! Yes, but it worked. That's the main point. We are happy it worked.
How do you know they didn't throw a party because they saved a million American soldiers?
No, because Feynman writes it. Pleasure of finding things out, you can read it there.
Okay.
No, it was because of that. They threw a party. By us, when we have a base team and we are killing one person, and that never happened. But in the Gemara, when you would kill a person, you would have to fast the whole day before you do that. It's life. It was by me. I was shocked. Beemis, I was shocked. I don't like to say that because I myself grew up in a Western civilization country, and I myself learned until today. I learned physics and mathematics and biology. I enjoy that. And for me, that's very painful too. But you have to know the danger of this bending and sanctifying the objective thinking which humanity gets lost. That's very dangerous, you know? That's very dangerous. It's a very dangerous thing. Even though you have benefits out of that. Atomic energy has benefits. Oh, you know, Fritz Haber, you heard that from that man, no? Haber Bosch, you know, this Fritz Haber, he was a Jew, grade, but he made that you can fertilizer. Yeah? So he saved the world, otherwise we would starve without these fertilizers. We would starve, simply, yeah? We would starve. But from the other side, it was dangerous there, because he was the man which, with his things, began chemical weapons in the First World War. He was the father of chemical weapons. Fritz Haber, the same guy, you know? So, what is there? There is a monster? This is the problem. We want to be human. We want to build a human being. We have to be very careful that we are not bending in front of the only objective thinking. Because only objective thinking makes believe that there is something there. Nothing to do with me, you know, that's what it is, what shall I do, you know? But you don't take responsibility, and you don't think about your responsibility, and that could be dangerous. We don't want that. We always want to stay human. We want to grow as a human being with our thoughts. And that's why objective and subjective, that was unbelievable perceptive for you. That objective and subjective thinking in the Torah is mixed. It's like a mixture. Yeah? But that is essential by us, okay? I think we have to seize now. I hope you enjoyed your time.
Thank you, everybody.